for which actually Black lives do not matter at all, as well as the Palestinian lives do not matter at all, asking actually to be part of the African Union. We know actually that the reason why they want to be part of the African Union is just actually to be able actually to have more direct control on the African Union.
One of the factors behind the collapse of the South African apartheid regime was international boycott. Mandela Mandela, an active defender of the rights of the Palestinian people and of the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions BDS campaign against the Israeli regime, speaks here on the importance of this boycott.
Let me say it loud and clear, ladies and gentlemen, for all to hear. Next to the internal popular protest movement waged in the face of all odds by the brave and courageous children, women and men of occupied Palestine, BDS is the most painful thorn in the side of apartheid Israel. They cannot stomach its worldwide popular appeal and success and will do all in their power and might to obstruct, hinder, or stand in the way of any forum that advances the principles that BDS stands for.
Professor, you earlier talked about the BDS movement to boycott the Israeli regime. Now, how can the people of Africa contribute to this movement of boycotting the Israeli regime?
The people of Africa can contribute in small and symbolic ways, such as kind of protests, such as more demands on their governments. But I think one of the more effective ways is lobbying. It is advocating. I mean, if you look at the Zionist lobby in other countries, say in Canada or in the United States or Germany or Britain, I mean, the power of a lobby is actually quite significant. And in this regard, the people of Africa should really take, civil society especially, can take a leaf out of their books and begin to, of course, our objectives are very, very different, but we simply have to pay more attention to public, displaying of public anger on the one hand, and active lobbying, usually behind the scenes, on the other. So public pressure and lobbying.
Our last question to you, Mr. Ahmed. What is the importance of the International Quds Day in raising global awareness on the Israeli atrocities in Palestine?
I believe that events like the International Quds Day is necessary to raise awareness, to create a much-needed education so that the consciousness of the people will be awakened again and people will be ready to engage in the path of the resistance, like the resistance today, the axis of the resistance spearheaded by the Islamic Republic of Iran, the resistance in Lebanon, and the Ansarullah, the resistance in Yemen.
Some Palestinian factions have for decades engaged in futile talks with the Israeli regime. The Tel Aviv regime never implements any agreement it signs with Palestinian representatives. Now, many Palestinians believe armed resistance is the only option remaining to liberate their land. During a visit to Gaza in 1995, the late Nelson Mandela met top Palestinian leaders and invoked the similarity between the struggle of Palestinians and South African non-whites. He noted that if negotiations fail, the only alternative is armed struggle.
Choose peace rather than confrontation, except in cases where we cannot get, where we cannot proceed, where we cannot move forward. Then, if the only alternative is violence, we will use violence.
The people of Palestine have tried to negotiate with the Israeli regime and even attempted peaceful means to resolve the conflict with the regime, but have failed. Professor Isaac, you have the last word. What options actually remain for Palestinians in their struggle to liberate their territories?
In South Africa, when we got to the point that that the regime was not serious with negotiations, that it wasn't interested in negotiations, Nelson Mandela declared the decision of the African National Congress in 1961 that the African National Congress would resolve to the armed struggle. I would say that any people that finds themselves completely occupied and dehumanized and with negotiations not a serious option, that they have the right to decide on their own means, and that includes an armed struggle to liberate themselves. And me sitting in the comfort of free South Africa, I'm not going to judge them for the decisions that they have made or that they will make.
Well, we'd like to thank Professor Farid Isaac and Mr. Abdulrahman Muhammad for their incisive analysis regarding the International Coast Day. And that brings us to the end of yet another edition of Africa Today. Drop us a line through our social media handle and let us know your opinion. It was great having you, and goodbye for now.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. in the limelight. Former Vice President Mike Pence's refusal to get into a Secret Service vehicle during the 6th of January Capitol riot is being called chilling as the House Select Committee prepares to reveal its findings sometime before the end of the year. The article you're about to hear has been written by Thomas Keeker, a reporter for Newsweek magazine. The piece is titled, Pence Refusing to Get in Secret Service Car on January 6th, Chilling. Former Vice President Mike Pence's refusal to get into a Secret Service vehicle during the 6th of January Capitol riot is being called chilling as the House Select Committee prepares to reveal its findings sometime before the end of the year. Speaking at a Thursday event hosted by Georgetown University's Center on Faith and Justice, Democratic Representative Jamie Raskin of Maryland, who is also a member of the House Committee investigating the Capitol riot, accused former President Donald J. Trump of attempting to organize a coup to circumvent Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 presidential election and stay in power. During the talk, he called special attention to a tense moment involving the former Vice President Mike Pence, NBC News reported. After being taken to an undisclosed portion of the Capitol building during the riot, Mike Pence's Secret Service agents, whom Jamie Raskin suspected were reporting directly to Donald Trump's security detail, asked him to enter an armored limousine. The intent, some have theorized, was to drive Mike Pence away from the building, preventing him from certifying the election results, after he had signaled his unwillingness to go against his duties and keep Donald Trump in power. Mike Pence uttered what I think are the six most chilling words of this entire thing I've seen so far. I'm not getting in that car, Jamie Raskin said. He knew exactly what this inside coup they had planned for was going to do. This moment was previously reported during an interview for the book I Alone Can Fix It, Donald Trump's Catastrophic Final Year, by Washington Post reporters Philip Rucker and Carol Leonick. According to Tim Giebels, the lead agent inside of Mike Pence's security on 6th of January 2021, Mike Pence repeatedly refused to be evacuated from the Capitol until the election results were certified, the Washington Examiner reported. I'm not getting in the car, Tim, Mike Pence said, in response to Tim Giebels' insistence that he entered the armored vehicle. I trust you, Tim, but you're not driving the car. If I get in that vehicle, you guys are taking off. I'm not getting in the car. Raskin discussed the House Select Committee's investigation further on Thursday, alleging in no uncertain terms that Donald Trump and his closest confidants attempted to organize a coup following the 2020 presidential election. This was not a coup directed at the president, the congressman, Jamie Raskin, said. It was a coup directed by the president against the vice president and against the Congress. Newsweek has reached out to Mike Pence's representatives for comment. Meanwhile, Cassidy Hutchinson, an aide for former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, listed the names of Donald Trump allies who were involved in meetings and phone calls with the former president and his top aides leading up to the 6th of January 2021 Capitol riot, according to excerpts from a testimony released in a federal court filing on Friday, 22nd of April. According to the court filing,
Cassidy Hutchinson, told the January 6th House Select Committee investigating the Capitol riot that top Trump allies in Congress were involved in efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election results. She noted in her testimony that those who attended meetings in December leading up to the 6th of January 2021 event included GOP Georgia Representatives Marjorie Taylor Greene and Jody Heiss, in addition to Arizona's Paul Gosar and Debbie Lesko. GOP Representatives Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, Louis Gohmert of Texas, Jim Jordan of Ohio, and Matt Gaetz of Florida also attended those meetings. And Rudy Giuliani, Donald Trump's personal lawyer at the time, was present at those meetings as well as members who were from the House Freedom Caucus, including Representatives Mo Brooks of Alabama and Andy Biggs of Arizona.
Say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witch hunt.
Turn here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
Four years of oppression, displacement, murder, imprisonment, assault, denigration, and misery. The Palestinian people have been resisting Israeli Zionist occupying regime day and night for over three quarters of a century. Many have lost their lives, many have lost their limbs, many have lost their homes and their farms, and many have lost their freedom. And despite all of this, Palestine is more alive than ever. Thousands show up to pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque and to defend it against occupying forces, even though they have been abandoned by the so-called civilized world.
The International Goats Day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We the People. I am your host, Daniel Arya. This episode is dedicated to Al-Quds and the people of Palestine, to their long oppression and torment, to their strength, hope, struggle, and resistance. We'll discuss International Goats Day, announced by late Imam Khomeini in solidarity and support of Palestine. We will also speak about the one-sided and biased support of the Israeli occupying regime by Western mass media and the billions of dollars given to them by the United States while they use them to bring down more suffering on the Palestinian people. This time, we're pleased to have our three distinguished guests on our program: Lara Kiswani, Executive Director of Arab Resource and Organizing Center, the AROC, Omar Zassa, writer and organizer at the Palestinian Youth Movement, and Abbas Motarim, our colleague, spoke to Nadia Tanous, also at the Palestinian Youth Movement. Stay tuned.
Shortly after the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran, the late Imam Khomeini called on all Muslims and Muslim governments to unite in order to sever the hands of the usurper and its supporters. He called on all Muslims of the world to select the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan as Al-Quds Day, and asked that through a ceremony demonstrating the solidarity of Muslims worldwide, announce their support for the legitimate rights of the Muslim people.
Now my first question, Lara Kiswani, how does this day help bring attention to Palestine?
I think all the commemorations and markers of time as it relates to the Palestinian struggle are instrumental in our ability to continue to raise consciousness about the plight for freedom, dignity, and self-determination of Palestinian people, but it also allows people the opportunity to engage in solidarity. So these kinds of days and commemorations like Al-Quds Day are ways for people across the world to say, I too support Palestine, and this is a day that I can plan for, show up for, including in Palestine itself, our people take this day very seriously. So I would, I think the way to understand these moments is everyone across the world who has a commitment to social justice and the supporting self-determination of all people's movements against colonialism and imperialism should support the Palestinian people. And many, if not most, do support the Palestinian people. And these types of days, commemorations, markers of time give you an avenue to actually engage in a practice, an act of solidarity. And it very much, these kinds of things have very much led the way towards raising consciousness and giving people markers across time to be able to organize and mobilize and educate communities, not only Arab and Muslim communities, but other communities as well.
After this declaration, every year mass demonstrations are held in Islamic and non-Islamic countries around the world in support of Palestine and to condemn the Israeli occupying regime. On this day in Iran, millions of fasting Muslims come out to the streets holding banners in support of Al-Quds and the oppressed people of Palestine while demanding the liberation of Palestinian land from the occupation of Israeli Zionist regime. Now, do you use this day as a platform to support Palestine?
Yes. I was saying, that the strength, I think, of Al-Quds Day, and affiliated messages is that it's tapping into something that is very organically inherent to the Palestinian struggle, right? These are already important symbols of resistance, of belonging, and of steadfastness. And so I think, that's the reason that it's been, an important feature, of different forms of, organizing and demonstrations and advocacy calling attention, to the different facets of the Palestinian liberation struggle. So.
The Israeli occupying forces have been repeatedly attacking Muslim worshippers at the Al-Aqsa compound in Al-Quds during the holy month of Ramadan these past few weeks. In the assaults, more than 150 people were injured and hundreds were arrested. The occupying forces were throwing sound grenades, firing tear gas and rubber bullets at Palestinian worshippers.
Now, these forces were also harassing Christian Palestinians and restricting their attendance for a ceremony at their respective church. Abbas asked Nadia Tanous, what has changed 74 years into this occupation?
So we're 74 years out from the first Nakba. I think what's important to note is that we as Palestinians say that the Nakba is ongoing. It never stopped. And so every effort of continued dispossession of the Palestinian people by Zionist forces is another iteration, another wave, another growth of Nakba, or catastrophe upon us as a people, and is assault upon our national liberation struggle. What has changed is that there is more social media coverage, particularly, I think, since last year during the Unity Intifada, that is reaching people outside of Palestine in a way that it wasn't before. And so there are more people who are able to witness and thus testify to the horrors of ongoing military occupation, apartheid, genocide, and settler colonialism by the Zionist regime.
Now, the relentless oppression of Palestinian Muslims and Christians for three quarters of a century would not have been possible without the support of Western nations, especially the United States. Now, according to data from the United Nations, the U.S. has vetoed resolutions critical of the Zionist regime in the U.N. Security Council at least 53 times since 1972. So what is the U.S. government's role in support of Israeli occupation?
At the end of the day, the United States is very much responsible for everything that is happening in occupied Palestine as we speak. As a Palestinian from the District of Jerusalem, born and raised here in the United States, I very much am aware of the way in which the pro-Israel agenda of this government finds its way through the educational institutions, find its way through corporations, through repression in the labor movements. It finds its way across sectors of this country. And it's very much the very fact that, again, as I to repeat, that if we understand Israel as a proxy to U.S. imperialism in the global south, then, of course, the United States is deeply invested in maintaining that partnership and that over close to $4 billion of aid a year, right? And Israel is also interested in maintaining its market in militarism and surveillance technology. And that's why even apartheid Israel uses the playbook of the United States and the way it colonized this land that I sit on in the United States. That was actually used as a template for what they did to us as Palestinians in Palestine. So there's a responsibility of all people here in this country to understand that partnership and relationship, but also to disrupt it.
While the Israeli regime enjoyed vast support from the Trump administration, just like every other U.S. government, the Biden administration also walks on a similar path.
The U.S. government's role, I mean, you know, obviously there's just the sheer billions of dollars, you know, that it pumps into this colonial state really without any kind of reservation, without any kind of, addendum or any kind of restriction ultimately, right? So it's these gifts of billions of dollars, you know, that go through. So that's, you know, materially something that allows for the Zionist entity to continue to, you know, assassinate, eliminate, and commit genocide against Palestinians and these apartheid policies, of course.
In 2016, the United States and the Israeli regime signed a 10-year, $38 billion MOU on U.S. foreign defense aid. Just this year, the United States State Department has announced that in 2022, the country will pay an additional $1 billion for the regime's Iron Dome defense system. Almost all U.S. members of Congress and senators are staunch supporters of the regime, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority and Minority Leaders Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell.
The United States government is deeply invested in the oppression of the Palestinian people. This year alone, the United States government is sending over $4.8 billion in military aid, which is the highest package that it's ever sent. And this is including, of course, the Iron Dome subsidy, the Iron Dome package. What's shocking about the way that this package, this military aid package to Israel was passed this year, is that it was done so through the omnibus bill, where literally the options were given to representatives like Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. Do you want to pass a domestic budget for clean water in Detroit, for example, or for local programs in your district? If you do, you have to vote for a $3.5 billion package to Israel because they're tied. And so we know that this is typical politics as it comes down in a non-democracy such as the United States. But the tactics this year were particularly shocking.
Now, strong lobby groups like the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, have been formed in the U.S. decades ago to lobby for the interests of the occupying Israeli regime. They have been successful in receiving support from most U.S. politicians. Lobby's annual conference usually draws presidents, vice presidents, former presidents, presidential candidates, as well as prominent congressmen and congresswomen and senators. So what is the role of lobbies in pushing for the Israeli regime's agenda in America? Laura?
Well, the way we would understand it is that there's an U.S.-Israeli partnership. So it's not that the United States is being pressured to support the state of Israel. It's in fact that the United States benefits from its support of the state of Israel, just like the state of Israel benefits from the support of the United States. And we would really understand this partnership as very much a partnership and a relationship of the global elite, the corporate class, rooted in racial capitalism. And that's why We continuously see sustained support with the United States maintaining Israel as a proxy state in the global south. So we can understand Israel is actually an instrument of U.S. and Western imperialism.
Another enabler of the Israeli regime's crimes against the Palestinians has been the campaign of misinformation and lies by the Western mass media. These media always try to portray the occupying forces as victims of terrorism and picture the murder of Palestinian women and children, displacement of people, stealing Palestinian land to build more illegal settlements, and the imprisonment of innocent Palestinian youth as self-defense. What is the role of the Western media in supporting the Zionist regime's actions?
Western media does more than a disservice to us as Palestinian people. They explicitly shift a paradigm away from the truth so that we can't tell our story on our own terms. And we are never given the space to demand what justice looks like or can be, because we can't even talk about oppression and our oppression on our own terms or with real details and real information. To call what's happening in Jerusalem today a clash is a fallacy. And it's a disservice to the truth-telling that an honest news outlet should have to inform people about what's happening around the world. So these are typical euphemisms that serve Israeli interests. It serves their interests to be able to provide basically media cover for Israel to continue to brutalize the Palestinian people without accountability and without any contention around so-called international, global community moral principles.
While the West has implemented sanctions against Russia over the war in Ukraine, and as a result has banned Russian news outlets from social media platforms like YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok, it continues to censor messages in support of Palestinians, while at the same time allowing and promoting the lies and fabrications of supporters of the Israeli occupation and the one-sided reporting from the occupied lands in support of the occupiers. Do you see double standards and hypocrisy in the way social media platforms deal with these events in the world?
Demonstrative of very blatant hypocrisy, because what's going on in Ukraine now in terms of the messaging is really you're even seeing, people who had apparently such an issue understanding, the righteousness of all forms of resistance, including armed resistance, suddenly it's become acceptable, within a mainstream context to, tell people, how to make Molotov cocktails, advocating for armed resistance as long as they're, Ukrainians fighting Russians, right? Fighting the regime that, the current state happens not to, be in support of or be in favor of and opposes, in the geo-imperial sense, in terms of the NATO consensus. So I think in that sense, it's very demonstrative of a very glaring and real hypocrisy. But again, it also shows that really this breaks down along, it's not along moral lines, but it's along geo-imperial lines. Who are the regimes that the United States supports, or what are the formations, that the United States supports in terms of those that best align with, Western imperialism across the globe. The people's struggles can be sort of contorted to align with that are the ones who are going to be framed in these seemingly universal moral terms.
Now, it's not just Western countries anymore which support oppression and occupy Palestinian territories. Recently, some Arab and Muslim governments have taken off their hypocritical masks and signed normalization deals with the Zionist regime in what they call the Abraham Accords. Now, the governments of the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Sudan, and Morocco have joined other governments which have abandoned the oppressed nation of Palestine.
The creation of the State of Israel in 1948, when my father was 10 years old, my father is older than the State of Israel, like I like to remind our colleagues here in the U.S. From the very beginning, there's been a role that was instrumental in maintaining the settler colonialism in our region, the role of other authoritarian dictatorships in our region who made it possible for the State of Israel to even be created on our land. And so we've seen over time those relationships shift in terms of which governments are relating to the state of Israel. But as we also know, there's a long history of resistance in our region to settler colonialism from particular nationalist movements as well.
The United States is almost always on the wrong side of politics worldwide, but the Palestinian issue is probably the most blatant and clear issue of how this country ignores all the atrocities against the innocent Palestinian people and supports the tyrannical and brutal Zionist regime. This unequivocal support, which the U.S. government and politicians often boast about, magnifies more than any other event on this planet the hypocritical nature of U.S. politics throughout the world.
Peace, and welcome back to Power to the People. On today's episode of Power to the People, we will take a look at some of the history of Black solidarity for Palestine. And we will look at why the liberation of Palestinians is connected to the liberation of Black and African people. History must always be at the forefront of our analysis. And history shows us that the British Empire colonized Palestine in 1917. But the question begs, how did Great Britain get the power and military might to be able to colonize Palestine? And how did the U.S. Empire get the power and military resources to back up the so-called Zionist state of Israel? Well, Great Britain, they had the resources to further its empire because it looted and plundered Africa as well as enslaved African people. In 1672, the British had established the British Merchant and Trading Company, which is a British way of saying slaver company, and they had a complete monopoly on the slave trade. This was a highly profitable trade company that helped give the British Empire its wealth, and they used the free slave labor from slavery to build its empire. Britain also had a colonial control. They had colonial control over African land. Post the Berlin Conference, which started in 1884, it was a conference of European nations that divvied up the continent, led to Britain gaining control and ruling over 30% of African people at one time. This subjugation of African people literally built the wealth of the empire, allowing the Brits to boost military spending and further develop their empire. This power that was built off of the enslavement and colonization of African people and land, this power was used to colonize non-African nations. This literally shows us the connection between the plight of Africa with the plight of Palestine as the British Empire colonized Palestine from 1917 to 1948. And the British Empire would have never been able to do so without it first colonizing Africa and enslaving Africans. With Black and Palestinians sharing struggle of the same struggle of being colonized, there's a long history of Black and Palestinian solidarity. And it's truly a joint struggle against these Zionist settlers and Euro-American settlers. And there's countless examples of Black and Palestinian solidarity. El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, aka Malcolm X, he visited Palestine, and shortly after, he wrote an essay called Zionist Logic in the Egyptian Gazette, in which he connects the violence of Euro-American imperialism and the violence of Israeli Zionist occupation as interconnected to both the plight of Africans and Palestinians. Another example of solidarity was when Black workers from the Detroit base of League of Revolutionary Black Workers, they helped recently immigrated Arab workers, many of whom were Palestinian refugees. They helped them challenge racial discrimination in auto factories within the United Auto Workers Union. And workers, they rose up and ended up forcing their union to divest from Israeli state bonds. Another example of Black and Palestinian solidarity is through the Black Panther Party. As the Black Panther Party, they had a newspaper and they regularly advocated for the liberation and complete freedom of Palestine. Its co-founder, Huey Newton, he visited an unnamed Palestinian refugee camp in Lebanon and said that, quote, Israel was created by Western imperialism and is maintained by Western firepower. And he is spot on, as the IEF, they have been trained by the U.S. military and U.S. intelligence agencies, and the weapons they use are both from the United States as well as Europe. And from 1946 to 2021, the so-called United States has provided Israel over $150 billion in bilateral assistance and missile defense funding. And this is the funding that we know about.
And recently, the U.S. Central Command had absorbed Israel into the area of its own responsibility. And this clearly shows that the USA and its Western imperialist counterparts are directly responsible for not only the creation of Israel, but the funding and maintenance of its military and firepower that allows it to occupy Palestine. We know that the USA, it got all of this wealth from slavery and the neo-colonization of Africa. Again, showing us the connection of how the plight of Africa and Africans is connected to the plight of Palestine and Palestinians. The Black and African struggle for freedom and the Palestinian struggle for freedom are deeply connected. It's a dialectical connection, meaning one cannot exist without the other. And we must share our solidarity for the Palestinian cause this Quds Day and every other day. Freedom is in our lifetime, and we must believe it. Free Palestine and free New Africa. This is Power to the People.
And that was our show, everyone. I'm your host, Daniel Arya, and do join us again next week for another episode of We the People. Bye-bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 12, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the government officials of the Islamic Republic. When mistakes seem insignificant, we become negligent about correcting them. We will not correct them and continue making them. These are the outcomes of arrogance. Notice how problematic this becomes. It deprives us of listening to friendly advice. Sometimes a person says something to us out of malice, and it might make us angry, but sometimes people criticize us in a friendly way, and we will not listen. Well, this is the first detriment, becoming arrogant. What is the second detriment? Passivity. Passivity is the opposite of arrogance. This is also a malady and detriment and is equally devastating. What does passivity mean? It means having low confidence, thinking that we are weak and feeling that we cannot go on. It means having a sense of being in a dead end and having no way out. Having no hope of divine mercy is one of the results of passivity, which is a big sin. Never give up hope of God's soothing mercy. This is Holy Quran, chapter 12, verse 87. One of the big sins is hopelessness about God's divine mercy. This results from passivity because One feels being in a dead end without a way out. This is a dangerous poison.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
For the manager, an official of an organization, it is really a poison to feel being in a dead end. The enemies are trying very hard to inculcate this sense into all of us, and they do so in different ways, through negotiations, meetings, slogans, interviews, and news. With some operational activities, they try to engender a sense of desperation, passivity, impasse, and the like in the other side. This is another detriment. Of course, our hands are open against this second detriment, which is passivity. In other words, we thankfully have the way to confront passivity in the Islamic Republic. First of all, we have divine promises, Quranic ayahs and verses, which are God's irreversible promises. In Holy Surah of Al-Imran, after mentioning the enemy's sentiments towards the Muslims, God says, if anything that is good befalls you, it grieves them, but if some misfortune overtakes you, they rejoice at it. After that, he says, but if you are constant and do right, not the least harm will their cunning do to you. Chapter 3, verse 120.
You've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Voices of solidarity with Palestinians once again resonated in Iran on the International Quds Day. Every year, the occasion brings millions of people to the streets to condemn the Israeli occupation of Palestine and its crimes against the Palestinian people.
Israel has been violating the sovereignty of Palestine for more than seven decades. They have expelled Palestinians out of their motherland, but no one is talking about this in US and Europe. So it's our duty as Muslims to come here and speak out about it.
I feel duty-bound to participate in the Quds rallies to remind the people of the world that Israel continues to kill Palestinians. Blatant rights violations are carried out by Israelis, but the UN is keeping mum.
This year's Quds Day is marked as Muslims are infuriated by Israel's fresh spate of raids on Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Since early April, the regime has intensified its violence in the occupied Palestinian territories, with the old city of Al-Quds being the flashpoint. Israeli forces have also been cracking down on solidarity protests throughout the occupied West Bank. Tel Aviv says it seeks to arrest, quote, Palestinian terror suspects, something which is described by demonstrators here as laughable.
What would it make Israelis if Palestinians are terrorists?
Israel has for decades been slaughtering innocent women and children in Palestine and continues to seize their lands. How dare they call Palestinians terrorists?
You know, the Palestinians were just there praying. The women were there praying. They attacked the women. The Israeli soldiers attacked the children. Innocent people. They were beating them up, arresting them, just because of being there and praying.
Demonstrators here call on Western leaders to adopt an all-inclusive, non-selective approach toward human rights, one that would see no difference between the suffering of Palestinians and Ukrainians. Quds Day was first designated in 1979 by the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, who called on all Muslims to hold pro-Palestine rallies on the last Friday of the month of Ramadan. Over the past 2 years, Quds rallies had been called off due to the coronavirus pandemic, and this is the first time in 2 years that the occasion is marked with physical participation.
4 decades since Iran introduced Quds Day, the occasion has turned into a global pro-Palestine rally, with even Jews around the world participating to denounce the Israeli occupation and raise awareness of the Palestinian suffering. These people say if it wasn't for Quds Day, the Palestinian cause could have slipped into oblivion. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Hundreds of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip attended a big ceremony on the International Quds Day. Each year, people around the globe hold rallies on this day, which takes place on the last Friday of the Muslim month of Ramadan, to express solidarity with oppressed Palestinians. International Quds Day was declared in 1979 by the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, to drum up international solidarity for the Palestinian people. Addressing the event via satellite, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps Chief Major General Hossein Salami vowed to continue Iran's support for the Palestinian people and their resistance. This year's International Quds Day commemoration comes amid rising tensions in Al-Quds as extremist Israeli settlers backed by troops desecrated the city's Al-Aqsa Mosque in recent days.
On International Al-Quds Day, we thank Imam Khomeini for designating this extremely important day. Imam Khomeini has called on the Islamic nation to return to the correct path towards Al-Quds, because Al-Quds is the common denominator and the core issue for all Muslims.
International Quds Day continues to symbolize the unity of Muslims around the world, and it also ensures the Palestinians that they have not been forgotten by their fellow Muslims.
Imam Khomeini designated International Quds Day to support Al-Quds and Palestine and to assert the great importance of resisting the Zionist occupation. Today, we're closer than ever to liberating Al-Quds because of our resistance. Our resistance only grew stronger following the Battle of the Sword of Al-Quds.
Leaders of Palestinian factions expressed their gratitude to Imam Khomeini for his historic initiative and called on Arab countries to follow in the footsteps of Iran and support the Palestinian people.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has been the role model in supporting the Palestinian people and their resistance, as well as in supporting Palestinians in Al-Quds. The solidarity that we see on Quds Day is a solid proof of Iran's unwavering support for the Palestinian people.
Occupied by Israeli forces in 1967, Al-Quds has been at the core of the Palestinian struggle for freedom and justice. Every year, International Quds Day draws worldwide attention to decades-long suffering of Palestinians. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Afghans in the capital Kabul have held a conference titled Quds, the Axis of Unity of the Islamic World, to mark Quds Day and to support Palestine. Speakers condemned Israeli aggression against the oppressed Palestinians and called for the freedom of Al-Quds.
Quds Day symbolizes the unity of Islamic countries against global arrogance and is aimed at supporting the liberation of Palestinian territories from Israeli occupation. Occupied Al-Quds is the first Qibla of Muslims and a territory of Muslim Palestinians. The freedom of Al-Quds makes the greatest wish of Muslims and freedom-seeking people of the world.
In order to help end the plight of Palestinians, Imam Khomeini not only initiated Quds Day, but also asked for Muslims gathering on the axis of Al-Quds. He said Muslims will succeed in freeing Al-Quds if they come together and firmly stand with Palestinians. Today we stand with Al-Aqsa Mosque defenders and condemn Israel's aggression.
Participants vowed to never leave Palestinians alone in their fight for regaining occupied territories and defending the Al-Aqsa Mosque. They also called on Muslim nations to take a strong stance against Israeli crimes, denouncing normalization of ties with the regime.
Recently, we witnessed some Arab countries shamelessly normalizing ties with Israel. They should know that it is a big mistake and that the regime will never become a friend of Muslims. In fact, we should stand with Al-Aqsa Mosque defenders and don't let enemies' plots weaken our intention for supporting our oppressed brothers.
Like elsewhere in the region and beyond, people in Afghanistan mark International Quds Day every year, taking the opportunity to voice empathy and solidarity with Palestinians. Despite struggling with many difficulties in their own country, Afghans have never forgotten the plight of Palestinians. People here say Muslims should gather on the axis of Al-Quds and fight arrogance. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
It's a friendly Ramadan iftar dinner hosted by Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi. The guests are ambassadors and heads of missions of Muslim countries in Iran. The event comes on the eve of the International Quds Day, a pro-Palestine rally that takes place every year on the last Friday of the month of Ramadan. Raisi called on Muslim nations to come out en masse in support of Palestinians.
Imam Khomeini regarded Palestine and resistance as the beating heart of the Muslim world. Quds Day is a time for the Islamic countries to unite. It is a day that brings hope to the downtrodden and the oppressed. Quds is a day that brings disappointment to the Zionist regime and the enemies of Islam.
This year's Quds Day will be marked as Muslims are infuriated by Israel's fresh bout of raids on Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. The regime has pressed ahead with its violence in the Flashpoint site and has been cracking down on solidarity protests throughout the occupied West Bank. Diplomats here slammed the Israeli violence and deplored some of the Arab leaders' silence on the issue.
Israel's blatant desecration of Muslim sanctities are unacceptable. They're attacking Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque. This is a blood violation of all international laws. So on this year's Quds Day, we once again condemn Israel's crimes and express our support for the Palestinian cause.
This year's Quds Day receives greater importance because of the ongoing Israeli assaults on Palestinians at Al-Aqsa Mosque. So on this day, we will once again voice our solidarity with the Palestinian nation and call for an urgent halt to the Israeli attacks.
Quds Day was first introduced in 1979 by late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, who called on all Muslims to hold pro-Palestine rallies on the last Friday of the fasting month of Ramadan. Over the past 2 years, Quds rallies were called off due to the coronavirus pandemic, and it will be the first time in 2 years that the occasion is marked with physical participation.
4 decades since Iran introduced Quds Day, the occasion has turned into a global pro-Palestine rally, with even Jews around the world participating. Now, the Iranian president once again renewed his call for a mass turnout in this year's Quds Day, saying this is the only way to bring the Palestinian suffering to light. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Just ahead of International Quds Day, support for Palestinians is gaining momentum across Lebanon. The seminar was held in the Lebanese capital, where the speakers touched upon the significance of the Quds Day.
The significance of this holy day is that Imam Khomeini called on the free people of the world and the Muslims of the world and the Christians of the world to look at this historic, religious, and national enemy which wants to steal your sanctities and Judaize your city and bury your heritage. Be cautious on this threat and be united to face this aggressive enemy.
With the violent Israeli crackdown against the people of the Holy City in Palestine, activists say the sacrifices of the Palestinians will be fruitful, and that Al-Quds Day is an occasion for Muslims to stand united in supporting the Palestinian cause.
Imam Khomeini considered that an Arab and Islamic identity is incomplete without liberating